Monster Man, episode 299, Boot and K-Man. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are beginning the humanoids section of Creature Catalog. Humanoids are, well, I don't feel like humanoids really need any explanation. They're, you know, humanoids. Goblins, elves, orcs, things like that. And we get a kind of a fun illustration here. We've got, an elf or half-elf or something, and a dwarf, and they're sitting there kind of hanging out, the elf looking tolerantly amused and the dwarf looking suspicious. And then in through the window behind them are peeping all sorts of monstrous humanoids, a cyclops and some kind of orky looking fellas. It's cute. It's fun. I don't think it's as good as the Conjurations one, but it's pretty nice. And I really like the sort of comically grotesque faces in the borders. Overall, I gotta say, this is a pretty good looking book so far. I love these chapter headings. I think most illustrations are good. Like, overall, I think this is pretty strong. So, our first monster for this episode is the Boot. B-H-U-T, Boot. And this is a creature from Indian folklore and literature. And a boot is a sort of a ghost or a ghoul. It's a malevolent supernatural being that eats human flesh. And it is described as a bunch of different things. Sometimes as a spirit that is like trapped outside the cycle of reincarnation, like it can't pass on for whatever reason. Other times it's, you know, a non-specific malevolent bogeyman kind of figure. Again, as we've seen with most folkloric monsters, clear categorization is not as important in real life as it is to the people who are making monsters up. And in keeping with my earlier remarks, the boot has a heck of an illustration. You know, a human-y looking figure, but with wild hair standing on end, huge goggling bug eyes, you know, snaky fangs, clawed hands, and rough and gnarly looking skin. Really great. A bit like ghouls, boots have got a claw attack that paralyzes people, but not completely. You kind of go numb and you take penalties to hit and you lose initiative. That's pretty cool. I like that. That's not so bad. And the version that is used in Dungeons & Dragons is the kind of shapeshifter version. So a bit like, you know, lots of other kind of Pokemon monsters, boots can appear as normal people and then they come out at night to prey on the innocent. And indeed, they sometimes take on, you know, particularly like trustworthy forms. So, you know, people who would have a reason to be just passing through and who'd be treated with respect, they use the example of like pilgrims. You know, boots might disguise themselves as pilgrims or traveling monks, which I believe is how they appear in X4, the Master of the Desert Nomads. And I read that wrong. I'm sorry. I said their claws freeze people, but it's actually their bite. The bite is cold. The claws are just claws. Yeah, so no, I like them a lot. And they're kind of like quasi-undead. So in some ways they act like undead. There are exceptions. So for instance, they can't be turned, which again, like the sort of undead, but not, reminds me a little bit of ghouls who are kind of ambiguously undead. One of the things that is common about boot stories, but that's not present in the boot as a monster in Dungeons and Dragons, is that there is usually some kind of telltale. So like the illusion of humanity that the boot creates is not quite right. And that's something that we see in a lot of folkloric shape-shifting monsters, right? Like the monster can change its appearance, but it can't change its shadow. You know, there's some feature that it can't hide, or there's some aspect of its behavior that is always wrong. You know, the kind of stay alert moral of the story. And there's some really great examples of boots. So in some stories, they can't touch the ground. So you'll notice that a boot is floating very slightly above the ground, or that they like always being carried around in a litter or riding on a horse or something like that. Another example is that the boot's feet are on backwards. That's pretty cool. And so like, you know, a boot might be wearing like a long dress or long robes to cover up the fact that its feet are the wrong way round. And I always like those. They have quite a fairy tale quality to them. Like here you have a bunch of characters sort of trying to figure out how to get a stranger to show a bunch of people their feet, which I guess could turn weird. But, it's in keeping with how kind of fairy tale monsters often appear. The one thing that I would say I'm not so sure about with the boot, I mean, I'm sure it fits in the scenario that it's from, but they're maybe a little buff with their 7 plus 2 and a bunch of additional abilities HD, they're maybe a bit tougher than their kind of village monster aesthetic would suggest. So, you know, the Boot is definitely the kind of creature that terrorizes a remote farming village, and that might have to be caught by, like, a plucky farmer or some cunning youths or whatever. And that isn't really in keeping with, like, a 7 HD monster, if that makes sense. So I feel like maybe there's room for a slightly weaker version of the Boot, you know, like, because ghouls don't have the sort of, like, deceptive thing. So, you know, maybe keep the illusory powers, keep the freezing touch, and then, you know, maybe don't make it such a great combatant. Not great, but it's you know, it's a reasonably dangerous combatant. But if you're preying on the villagers, you don't need to be that handy in a scrap to take out a bunch of farmers and peddlers and aged hermits and milkmaids and so on. But yeah, the Boot is pretty good, and this illustration is just very good, very atmospheric. I like it a lot. The next monster has an illustration that's not quite as good. Not that there's anything specifically wrong with it. I mean, it's a very good picture, but what it doesn't do is put the monster in any kind of context. It's just a picture of a little lizard guy. Well, not even little. It's just a picture of a lizard guy. But this lizard guy is little, because we're talking about the K-Man. The pun is like a K-Man, right? A K-Man is a sort of crocodilian lizard, and lizard? Reptile? I mean, I don't know. Anyway, but it's a bit like a crocodile, but smaller. I say smaller. In fact, there are caiman species that are quite large. But in general, if you think about a caiman, you think about it being a good deal smaller than an alligator or a crocodile. And thus, the caiman. Crocodiles are big, and lizard men are big. Caiman are small, and caiman are small. But they're really small. They're like a foot tall. Which, that's 30 centimeters for my metric listeners. And that's not very big at all. So they're really much more, like, they're kind of smaller than goblins, right? They're little imp dude kind of guys. And that makes them a little bit more appealing. It also kind of raises the question of what they're for. So my first minor niggle about the K-Men is that they're not hostile particularly. They're neutrally aligned. They're basically just another species of humanoids that live in villages, and like a lot of intelligent humanoids, they have the, like, features that one might associate with indigenous cultures. So, like, let's say you're designing some monsters, and you want them to have a tribal culture that is, you know, not at a medieval level of technology, right? So that's out of keeping with the kind of ordinary, kind of quasi-feudal medieval technology of a D&D game. But you don't want to do that by taking the signifiers that we associate with, like, Native Americans and applying them solely to monsters so that, you know, the humans are European and the monsters are Native American. Ooh, that's a bit awkward. I honestly feel like one of the things you could do is just stop calling their magic users shamans. That's not even a Native American term, right? That's a Siberian term, but it's come to be applied to the spirituality of lots of different indigenous peoples. Come to be applied, perhaps incorrectly, to that spirituality, but that's a whole different argument. Just call them priests. Heck, call them druids. I mean, honestly. Again, I'm not saying that this is the intention, and I'm not saying that any one instance of this is intended in a hurtful or discriminatory way, but I think there's very clearly a trend here of using the cultural signifiers of indigenous cultures primarily on non-humans, and that's weird. It's weird when you think about it. I don't think people were thinking about it, but perhaps they ought to have done. Leaving that to one side, I think these guys are fine. I think it'd be absolutely possible to run a game where it was fun that there was a village of little lizardy guys in the swamp or whatever, but I don't know what they do. They're not particularly aggressive. They're not particularly dangerous. They just kind of live in villages and chill. So they just sort of, maybe they're just a not in Kansas anymore monster, right? Maybe the role of a village of people is taken by a village of caiman. Now, I believe they first appeared in AC2, which is the little scenario that came with the Dungeon Master screen. But I don't know anything about that scenario. What I do know is that they get developed later on in X9, The Savage Coast. And there's an illustration from that that is delightful. He's just a little lizard guy, and he's riding like a bison or something like that. Terrific. He looks adorable. He looks as cute as a button. I want to be his friend. So the kind of generically Lizard Man-y illustration here doesn't give you that feeling. And the Savage Coast one, by putting it into an illustration with something else that more effectively shows the scale, just does such a good job. And I think that that just makes all the difference. You know, it's a minor point, it's a purely cosmetic point, but just by seeing this little chap riding on the back of his bison, it makes me want to look after him. And as soon as you do that, these guys become rife with story potential. They're just good little guys. I like them. It's such a cute illustration. It's not done in a cutesy way at all. It's done in quite a naturalistic way, but he just looks like a little sweetheart. You know, he's so small, and the bison is so big, but he's just got a good attitude about it. Ah, I like him already. So the K-Man is pretty good when you think about how to properly contextualize them, and that could be as simple as an appealing visual representation. And honestly, that's the truth to a lot of monsters. First impressions are a big deal. All right, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. We've got a special episode this week coming up about the Periton, and at the end of the week, we'll be celebrating our 300th episode, looking at the Chameleon Man and the Crone of Chaos. All that right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.